Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the December 14 edition of Commodity Week. Wheat, despite the continuing dry conditions out west, came under pressure this week when USDA added 50 million bushels to the national carryout. Can this short crop be capped out by dwindling demand? We'll find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the VP of Research for ADM Investor Services, Steve Freed. Our panelists in studio today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production, of course, of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's open today's discussion, Mike Zuzolo, with this question. Wheat lost 40 cents on the week. It led the coarse grains lower. Why, given the dry weather, did it stay down after the WASDE report this week?
And why would it lose that much given the Southern Plains weather and the export business that we saw too, Todd? I think that's a great question. And I want to say the best intelligent answer I can give is fiscal cliff. And I don't use that as just a parachute to pop out of. Some of the commodity trading fund contacts that I've spoken with the last couple, 3 weeks are suggesting that's exactly what's holding them back from stepping into the market. And I do think they're ignoring and not trading or pricing in the fact that we're only going to get about 0.3 inches of rain between now and the end of the year in the Southern Plains. We're just not trading weather right now. We're trading this weaker demand picture and this fiscal cliff idea. And it reminds me a lot of corn about 7 months ago before we broke higher because of the drought.
Kurt Kimmel?
A lot of long liquidation. When you look at the volume in open interest has been going down this break. It's profit-taking. We did see wheat go up to some resistance that failed to go higher. We feel we saw some unwinding of the wheat-bean spread, wheat-corn spread. And I think we got down to a point here where the wheat markets fulfilled the technical objections on the cycles. The wheat's been doing a perfect 8-week low from low to low, and that sort of came in this week in here. We kind of recommend buying wheat and putting stops under this past week's low.
And Greg Johnson.
Well, it's only December, and the wheat is not out of its dormancy yet, so we really can't prove. We think we may have some problems, but we don't know that for a fact until we get into March, April, and see. And, you know, they're talking about cold, dry weather in Russia as well. So we have some potential problems around the world, but nothing that we can prove as of yet.
We get oftentimes in a year, a whole bunch of times, to kill that wheat crop, I suppose. Yeah. Is that what you're hoping for? We kill it a couple more times?
Well, if you're long, yeah. If you're a producer, I don't know if you want to kill it and have to tear it up. I know you can kill wheat, but I've had producers say the wheat's dead and going to tear it up, and they ended up harvesting. I asked, well, what did it yield? Well, best wheat ever. So it's a tough crop, but we're going to have several weather scares. But the main thing is the weather out west. Those guys, this is the worst they've seen it in years upon years.
December wheat this week, by the way, had a high of $8.41.5. It's low at $7.92.25. That's on the weekly trade high and low. And December contract at $8.01 finished 43.25 lower than last Friday. And July, the harvest month, at $8.33, was down 40 and three quarters of a cent. It did lose 24 cents on Tuesday after the WASI numbers were released. Those numbers, of course, added an extra 50 million bushels back into the ending stocks for wheat. Is export demand really that poor?
It has been up to this point, but now we're getting the price of wheat, U.S. wheat, compared to other countries to where it's favorable. So we should start seeing some pickup in export business, but we haven't seen it yet.
One of the numbers that I watched out of those WASD reports is their season's average cash price. It changed just 10 cents. It was down 10 cents on both ends, I think, or at least for the midpoint. And then it narrowed the range from $7.70 to $8.30 a bushel for the old crop wheat, or that that's already in the bin. Is that a good range yet for the season's average cash price? And I suppose most of that has to be put into the marketplace already.
Well, for the most part, you know, this is the fine-tuning aspect, but the big price range that we're going to be watching will be this new crop coming on. That's going to be the wider swing, and that's going to really hinge on what type of weather we see this spring.
Tell me more about that 8-week low that you were talking about in the cycles. Came this week and gave you a buy signal, another 8 weeks out again, right?
Well, in theory, it should move higher in at least week four and through here. There could be some corrections in through here, but the momentum indicators, you know, rolled over. Now, the way we sort of finished the weekend here, we're positioned to turn the technical picture higher here if we can just see some follow-through buying first part of this coming week.
Mike, did you read the global picture from WASD? What did they say about wheat?
Well, there's a big disparity right now, Todd. The global picture from WASD says we've got 177 million metric tons ending stocks. IGC came in just Friday morning and said we've got 172. The UNFAO came in last week and said we've got 163, and they all have different consumption numbers. We've got about a 15 million ton disparity between those three major agencies, and the consumption, that's not even including what the consumption disparity could mean, too. I like Kurt's cycle from a standpoint of these global fundamentals, because if USDA is wrong and on the high end, then you're talking about being at least 50 to 90 cents undervalue on the model that I use. And like I said in the opening comments, it seems eerily familiar to the corn market back in May when we were bearish about everything. And all of a sudden we woke up to a historic drought, and it really feels that way out west right now. And I think the producers, as we get into January, those Southern Plains producers, I think we'll hear a lot more from them about 25, 30 plus percent acres being ripped up in hard red wheat.
December corn this week, a $7.32 and a quarter top, a bottom there at $7.09 and a quarter. Settlement price for the old crop at $7.18 and three quarters. A loss this week of 14 cents from last Friday. December for the new crop are 2013 at $6.28, down 9 3/4 of a cent. USDA in its WASD report left the ending stocks unchanged. Did it just go down in concert with the wheat number?
I think so. I think wheat drug the corn down, and you've got the year-end selling going on, and it's still a decent price for corn, so there is some selling, and there's a lot of uncertainty about this fiscal cliff, and so some funds and some speculators just decided to take their profits and get out.
What is your basis on corn?
Spot corn's 10 over for Dece, but 20 over for Jan, 25 over for Feb, so, you know, big positive basis levels.
And they remain, they've been that way for, well, more than a year now.
Yes, yeah, and they're going to get crazy high this spring and this summer. I mean, farmers just don't seem to be patient. They want to move the corn now, and I understand that. They want to move corn while the weather's good, but if you can be patient, I think you'll see much, much better basis levels when we get into spring and summer.
You got to tell me what you think crazy high might be.
I think, you know, last year we saw some 70 over basis levels. I think we can approach those kind of levels again and maybe even take those out.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think corn guys have moved corn. They're scared of the aflatoxin. They want to move it now, like Greg said. The end user's pretty well booked up. Some of these guys are booked out till May, but as we go on down the road in through here, I think that the demand's going to kick back in. But everybody's fearful of exports. Exports run 50% of a year ago. But when you look at the bottom line, 600, 700 million bushel carryout is still historically tight. So this corn market's got some room down the road. Short term in here, we feel that corn cycle is recorded a 10-week low. It's been working the same rhythm as the wheat in through here, so we'll see if this 715 level can hold the March corn futures.
Everybody is fearful of exports, Mike Zuzulo, but USDA, nonetheless, did not change their ending stocks number for this year. So apparently they're not all that fearful.
No, you bring up a good point. They took a pass this month, I think, on the corn. And I think this is where the wheat corn really comes into play between the ethanol, the exports, and the January report for corn, which I think the trade's going to ramp up a bearish attitude towards. Even though we may see weaker or lower harvested acres, I think we can look for pretty bad exports coming out in the January report. But between those three things, in the wheat-corn spread, I think that's where you really need to see the wheat lead the corn, at least initially, especially through the report in January into mid-January, maybe even later January. Then I think you can start talking battle for new crop acres, and then the corn catches once the wheat already has.
Now, I was going to ask you for pros and cons on new crop corn, but let's go with the pros because you're talking about a battle for new crop acres.
I think there still is a battle for new crop acres, and I think the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange helped that and promoted that cause on Thursday when they said only 61% of the corn was planted in Argentina. And Todd, based upon people I speak with down there, they've got about two more weeks to do it. By the time you get to January 1st, if you haven't got those crops planted, that corn planted, like last year, you start looking at lower yields, so you can start cutting most likely production potential in Argentina. And we're looking at 1 to 3 inches of rain this coming week in Argentina in those same areas that need to get planted. So we've still got 61% in the ground, still got 40% left to plant, and it doesn't look very good for this next couple weeks.
Well, this last fall we talked about more bean acres versus corn just due to getting back in the rotation. But when you visit with producers, $6 corn still pencils out very well for the inputs. They still make a lot of money. So we're going to have a lot of corn acres this coming spring.
You agree with that?
Yeah, I think we're going to see, farmers that pay the high cash rents almost have to plant corn because the beans just don't pay the bills. So they're going to gamble and plant corn. And as Kurt said, if we can grow something close to a normal crop with 96, 97 million acres, we could have a surplus of new crop corn. So old crop corn and new crop corn are kind of two different animals. But potentially, until we can prove otherwise, I think the trade is going to assume we could have plenty of corn by next fall.
They will assume that, probably, for sure. We'll get some numbers in January, and then, of course, the outlook numbers from USDA about how many acres they think might be planted. Last year they were at 96 million. Remember, that's where they started, and that kind of took everybody by surprise. Can we, if we get that kind of number or something larger than that, I suppose, from USDA this year, hold the price of new crop corn through the February crop insurance price month setting time frame?
That's a good question. We are awful dry out west of the Mississippi River, so that will limit the potential. We won't go to 550 as we did last year based on this big acreage number, but we're at 625 roughly today. So could we lose 25 to 50 cents? Yes, we could do that.
Yeah, more acres and a little favorable weather, there is some downside. But the thing about it is that's been the number one marketing program now for these producers, is to make sure we have a higher price during the month of February.
Well, it's their number one marketing program, but do they have much control over it? Can they just hang on to a crop during that time frame and hope? Well,
one thing they can do with their crop insurance, there is a rider called a multiple price discovery amendment, and you can lock in the December price for the month of December and for the month of January as well as February. So, December's almost done. 2 more weeks to go, and we're going to probably average 630. So if you want to lock that in, that's a pretty good place to have a pretty good average locked in. So that, and it's pretty cheap insurance too.
Turn your attention to soybeans. January contract to $14.97 top this week, a low at $14.53. They settled at $14.96. They were up 23¾ cents on the week. They were the gainer in the pits. Did they have a really good week, in your opinion, given the pressure that came from the other side?
Good week, yes. Really good would have been a $15 handle on the week's close, Todd. That would have really made me happy as a technician and from a standpoint of the sentiment when we walked away Friday afternoon. But I think the trade is starting to realize that we are on track for a 1.8 billion bushel export number, and USDA didn't touch the exports on the December report this week. I think the trade's realizing we're running 30-plus% ahead ahead in year-to-date commitments for beans, 40% ahead in meal, and over 400% ahead in bean oil. And USDA doesn't have any of these numbers near that level. So I think the trade's starting to finally catch that the demand rationing is not taking effect.
Given all of that, USDA did change their carryout number. They dropped it by 10 million to 130 million bushels. But in that same respect, they took the season's average cash price and they dropped it 35 cents, and it now ranges from $13.55 to $15.55, so midpoint's $14.55.
Yeah, $15 is going to be an obstacle short-term, and through some technical resistance, like Mike said, if we can get above 15 in the January futures contract, we can go on up to that 15.5. So that'd be the upper end of the range there to shoot for if you do have cash beans to sell. Probably the main thing to watch, those is bean oil. They added one-third more to the export side of it. So the bean oil and the world vegetable oil market is probably the hot one to watch as we go into this winter and spring.
And we've also seen prices rally 4 weeks in a row now in the bean market, and that sounds good. We're $1.25 off our lows, but we have to remember we went into the fall, you know, over $16, so we're still, you know, well over, you know, a buck and a half off of our highs. So, you know, it was a nice rally, but we're just getting back into the mid-range.
And of course, we're listening to Commodity Week. This is the December 14 edition. Our panelists in studio include Greg Johnson of The Anderson, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. In just a couple minutes, we'll return. We'll talk with the Vice President of Research for ADM Investor Services, Steve Freed.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Wet weather this week was centered on South Brazil and Paraguay. Any dryness that had been building in the past month has been alleviated. Rainfall of 2 to 5 inches was common this week across Paraguay and western portions of Rio Grande do Sul, Santa Catarina, and Paraná. Mostly dry and very warm weather will persist in South Brazil and Paraguay through Monday. Then a wet weather system with 1 to 3 inches of rain follows from Tuesday through the rest of the week. More than adequate soil moisture will cover the region, but field work will stop after Monday. The rain will cool the air from unseasonably warm conditions just as corn pollination begins. Farther north, in center-west and southeast Brazil, scattered thunderstorms dumped 2 to 5 inches of rain on western Mato Grosso and northwestern Mato Grosso do Sul this past week. Elsewhere, rainfall amounts were lighter. In fact, most areas have received only about half their average rainfall so far this month. Scattered thunderstorms are expected to increase in coverage across this area in the coming week, stabilizing soil moisture. In Argentina, hot and dry weather prevailed this week toward the northwest, while rainfall of mostly less than 1 inch occurred to the southeast. Overall, field work improved this past week in Argentina. Mostly dry weather will continue through Monday with the exception of scattered thunderstorms in the south. Then widespread rain returns next Tuesday and Wednesday with amounts of 1 to 3 inches. Scattered thunderstorms will follow later in the week. That means some areas will remain too wet for corn and soybean planting and winter wheat harvesting. That is your South American weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This is the December 14 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Zuzulo, Kurt Kimmel, and Greg Johnson are in studio with us. On the phone line today is the Vice President of Research for ADM Investor Services, Steve Freed. He, of course, is one of the most respected fundamental grain analysts in the industry and has been for over 25 years. Thanks so much for joining us from Chicago, Steve. We do appreciate that. You're a fundamental analyst, so tell me what it is across the globe that piques your interest most these days.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that, as traders, we have to look at a given day. I think that top of the list might be, the different demand scenarios. You know, you've got soybean demand, U.S. Soybean demand at record pace, whether it's export or crush. And you know, we got some crush data for the month of November that was pretty high. And so you look at the numbers, and it looks like we're going to get pretty tight before We get into our next harvest, or at least the South American harvest, and you know, there's talk that China may have to come in and buy a few more extra beans from us than expected because of some uncertain logistics in the month of February for Brazil. So, I mean, I think that's number one on soybean traders' mind. And the opposite is true in corn and wheat. Even though we thought that we would be in a window right now to get wheat exports, we're not seeing the buying that we thought we would, and you've got a lot of people long basis levels for that, and I think that that's been kind of hurting the wheat market because people are just too long way for that demand. And corn export demand, it's just not there. When we went to $8 corn, people found other feed grains around the world to substitute for, and I think that's hurting the corn market. Secondly, is just all these funds worried about slower economies in Europe, United States, and rippling effect that might have in China. We don't know how to trade fiscal cliffs, and usually uncertainty is bearish, and you're seeing a lot of the funds liquidate some of their long commodity positions if we don't figure out a deal in time, or if that deal is a bad one. And then finally is weather. I think that you know, we're starting to see some people talk about U.S. summer weather patterns, and I was out in Nebraska last week, and it's very dry out there, and some of the spring forecasts are continued dryness there, but down in South America, you have to label it a pretty favorable condition. So it's going to be hard, I think, beans to rally even with this demand if South America has a record crop.
Steve, turning to new crop corn, each of the last 3 years, first of the calendar year, prices have been pretty good. Farmers have sold ahead, and that's been the wrong thing to do. The fall price has been higher than the January price. This year, the January price is higher than any of those previous 3 years on January 1, or at least it looks like it will be. Is this the year for farmers to sell ahead, or what should they be doing with new crop corn?
Well, I think whenever I go out and give speeches, the farmers remind me that I wanted them to sell the last 3 years early, and that's been the wrong thing to do. I think they're worried about the weather, but they also are worried that we're one good crop away from $4 corn. So I think there's a little bit more interest this year to do something in options, like buying a $6 put. If we were to get these corn back to the contract ties around $6.60, and then you know, they have a floor set, they don't have to sell any cash, and they have crop insurance to back them up. So I think there might be more put buying in corn and beans this year than normal, and just kind of waiting things out and just see how the weather pans out.
Steve, what would be your one commodity to watch in agriculture side that you feel might be the so-called leader here this winter?
Well, you know, I think we have to look at the results of that January 11th report. You know, I think that if that report shows a little bit lower D1 corn stocks than expected, then corn could be the leader. You know, you have certainly the momentum in the bean market right now, but, you know, again, like I said earlier, if you have a record South American soybean crop and they can push a record amount of grain out of exports, then the bean market might run out of some of that momentum. So I guess, you know, and also when you look at some of the dryness and in the U.S. Midwest, some of the forecasts for the summer, I'd probably be watching corn. It might be the leader on the upside, whereas beans might be the leader on the downside.
Steve, following up with your opening comments, when you see what you see in the market as a grain trader, and then you're trying to mix that with the fund business, do you see most of what we've seen in the grains diverging from the equities, like corn and wheat going down while the equities are making 8-plus month highs, as more commodity super cycle being over with, or is it more a fiscal cliff, or can you give a percentage of each in your mind or not?
Well, I think that we're seeing more and more big banks saying that they're getting out of trading commodities, whether it's the new regulations or just they've lost money trading. And so that's kind of offering a void of that particular volume that's traded, and we'll see who fills that void. But I think that some of the momentum traders think that we're maybe going into a cycle where commodity prices may be lower because of the global economy. I don't think that the agricultural bull market is over. I think that you're still seeing a lot of global demand. We know that the Chinese want to increase their hog herds, and I think that there'll be a lot of swings based on weather conditions. But I think once the noise of fiscal cliff, once the noise of all this goes away, some of these funds will come back into the grain markets, especially if there's any weather concerns, or more importantly, if we start getting some of the demand back that we've lost.
The livestock, speaking of demand, all finished the week higher. Lean hogs were up $1.92.5 on the lead. The feeder cattle were up $3.87.5, and the fats were up $2.20 for the week. I understand the feeder cattle thing, probably because of drought and moving feeders out, just simply not available at this point. But does this give you hope that the livestock sector might be ready to begin to get some more demand, whether that's on short supply or someplace else?
Well, I think most livestock producers, are losing money. You start at the dairy side and kind of work into the cattle side, and then look at hogs and chickens. So I think they would welcome lower feed grain prices. And as far as demand goes, in the cattle side, the second to third quarter production is actually going to decline from a year ago and from the previous quarter. So we have a lot of concerns right now about profitability, and for that sector, I think they would welcome lower feed grain prices to try to get supply back and try to satisfy the demand. The demand seems like it's okay. It's just it might be shifting from product to product.
Steve, on the one hand, we've had disappointing corn-on-corn results here in central Illinois the last 3 years. But on the flip side, it's going to be dry, and so there should be less prevented planting acres next year. How do you see the acreage battle shaking out as far as corn versus beans next year?
Well, I think right now most of the guesses are that we're going to plant more corn and bean acres next year. I think these prices will trigger that. And we'd heard earlier somebody talk about the high rent cost that keeps going up, and so I think it's to the benefit of the farmer who has money in his pocket to increase plantings. I think regionally corn's going to go up in the north and in the south. You'll probably see more corn plantings versus cotton, rice, and peanuts. And then the soybeans, we might see some more soybeans in the Midwest where corn on corn was hurt. But I think that in general we should see higher acres because of where prices are and that with crop insurance, it does pay to go out and plant these acres. And, we'll be watching the farm bill pretty close and see what happens from a crop insurance standpoint. There's some people who think that at the end of the day, once we have the new farm bill, there'll be more advantages to plant corn and beans than some of the other crops in some of the fringe areas. So, down the road, because of crop insurance, because of the farm bill, we could also see additional increase in corn and bean acres.
Steve, thanks so much. That's Steve Freed. He's with ADM Investor Services out of Chicago, Illinois. Serves as their vice president of research. Now time for a final word from our panelist in studio. We'll start with you, Greg Johnson.
I think farmers want to be patient on their old crop corn. We may have to wait until after that January 11th crop report, but I think it'll pay to hold on to old crop corn.
Kurt Kimmel?
Season's greetings from everyone from Bates Commodities. It's been a wonderful year. We wish everybody a happy and wonderful holiday.
And Mike Zuzulo.
Ditto, Todd. Merry Christmas to you and all those wonderful listeners. Thank you for everything.
Absolutely. We will have another Commodity Week next week, but we'll repeat it again over the New Year. So we'll be back with really a fresh panel for the first time once we get to January. Thanks so much for listening to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason from University of Illinois, and to our panelists, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Mike Zuzulo of Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.